Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B, a Survivor Fun and Games podcast. My name is Mike Bloom, talking about the ninth episode of Survivor 35. I'm here joined by an illustrious panel, post-American Thanksgiving. We are sufficiently stuffed to the gills, but still ready to talk about this episode of Survivor. First, let's welcome back the person who is here every week on the B&B, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I am great. I have traveled far and wide, but I'm here. For example, I traveled all the way across my living room. It was like 20 feet, so really struggling today, but it's okay. I'm here and I'm ready to talk Survivor.
So our guest might have you beat by just a few feet in terms of travel, at least in the past couple weeks. And it turns out to be extremely appropriate in that, you know, if Leon and I are the Dr. Mike America Statue of Liberty, this guy is quite literally from the realm of King Arthur and the Round Table. He is the other half of the Dom and Colin podcast. We had Colin Stone on a couple of weeks ago, but he's here right now to talk to us about Survivor. Dom Harvey, welcome to the B&B.
Hello, thank you. It's very exciting to be here. I was told there would be games, maybe even some fun. So looking forward to all of that. And I think it is very appropriate that I'm here. I wasn't expecting my nationality to be under attack this episode, but now that it is, I feel the need to come on here and defend my people.
Yes, is Dr. Mike welcome in the UK after his analogy that he made at the end of Tribal Council?
He would get a stern tutting at the border, I reckon. But I think we'd let him in eventually.
So his analogy, just to clarify this, because I was a little confused, he was saying that like him and I guess Joe and Cole, they were the Statue of Liberty that were going to be around after the British lost the war. Like, were the Round Table, are they supposed to be the ones who are defeated, right?
So Ben is King Arthur, and at some point King Arthur learned to time travel, and he jumped forward about 600 years, ended up in the Revolutionary War, and at some point, Mike, I don't even know where this is going, but...
No, that makes sense, obviously.
No, it makes sense. I mean, we've all seen a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. I think we're all aware of that that completely historical event that happened. Yeah, what I think Mike was trying to talk about is like, hey... The seven, they believe in this idea of the Round Table, but you know what? I'm oddly fine to represent America because in the end, America defeated the British. So I think it's more so a bigger metaphor for the fact that, like, you guys think you might be all high and mighty, but we're us scrappy underdogs are going to defeat you at the end of the day. And if the preview for next week is any indication, they might have their own Battle of Lexington coming much sooner than they thought.
And the preview always is some kind of indication, right? That's an ironclad law survivor at this point.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens in the episode.
As historical as a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court.
Yeah, okay, well, I didn't really get that.
So on the analogy power rankings, is this higher or lower than Ryan's birthday party analogy from the first few episodes?
I was going to say the exact same thing. Like, it was sad birthday party versus time-traveling King Arthur. Like, I don't know which one we think is better. Probably the sad birthday party is sad, I guess, as that is.
Well, I think the sad birthday party, it comes down to, like, what you want to take in an analogy. If you want something you can relate to, the sad birthday party, unfortunately, a bunch of us have probably gone through that experience. I don't think many of us have leapt through eons to possibly face anachronisms in our military setting. So I'm not entirely sure of the second situation, but it's much more fantastical. So really, you know, your mileage may vary. But before we get really down the rabbit hole into this episode, as per usual, Dom, give us your Survivor origin story. When did you first get into the show?
So I got into the show about, I want to say, 7.5 years ago now, which still feels bizarre to say. So I was just scrolling through some TV-related forum, and I came across this very heated debate about whether Russell should have won Heroes versus Villains or not. And at the time, I wasn't remotely qualified to have an opinion either way, but that didn't stop me jumping in.
Wait, what did you say?
Well, I just kind of played along with whatever side seemed most sensible at the time. And the basic premise of what they were talking about seemed pretty appealing. So I watched the first episode of the season, which is not great to start with an All-Star season. But if you want to hook someone in, that's a great season to do it with. It's just action from pillar to post. So I saw the show and fell in love with it, even though the game was highly flawed, as we were to learn very shortly.
Loud.
I just love this idea of, like, you on the thread being like, listen, I don't know who this Russell guy is or what this show is even about, but you know what? He probably should have won.
You like are the trolls on the internet, like all those people that are arguing that have no data to back up whatever it is they're saying. You're part of the problem, Dom.
Well, I went back and reread some of those discussions a few years later, and my post actually held up pretty well compared to a lot of the stuff in that thread. So I realized that no one really has any idea what they're talking about, and they're just kind of playing along. So that's there's a good metaphor for life somewhere in there.
That's right. The fake it till you make it.
Yeah, exactly. So then that being said, once you finished Heroes versus Villains, did you then go back to the beginning? Did you pull a Puya / Haley Strong and watch them in reverse chronological order? How did you get to the point where you are today?
I should have watched them in chronological order. I just kind of jumped around based on recommendations that I heard. So people said, well, China's pretty good. So I watched China, and then Token Teens is the next one you need to watch. So I just followed that rubric, I guess, which I ended up being even more spoiled than I should have been otherwise. There were very few seasons where I went in not knowing anything significant about what happened towards the end, which I don't want to say ruined the viewing experience, but it certainly made it quite a bit different. So Nicaragua in the autumn, after I'd fully caught up, that was the first season that I was watching live with no idea what was going to happen, even though everyone and their mother was spoiled on that season and I was trying to spoil everyone else.
Oh, Survivor Nicaragua coming back again. But you didn't have any time travel, did you, to watch the seasons?
Not at that point. I hadn't fully developed it yet.
I was going to say, I love that, like, we've had some people do, you know, the chronological approach. Puya and Haley have done, like, the Benjamin Button approach of watching things in reverse. You definitely took the quantum leap approach and just sort of jumping around in any sort of random order, hoping that the last jump will be the jump to Survivor Nicaragua.
Well, time is a social construct, Mike. You have to move past that at some point.
Yes, absolutely. Time is indeed a flat circle of pizza that Cole will eat too much of and people will get mad at him. Let's get into the episode proper, episode 9 of Survivor, Triple H, as we said goodbye to Cole as he becomes the second member of the jury. Overall, Liana, what'd you think about this episode?
I liked this episode. I think that, you know, the boot was overall relatively predictable. You know, I think there were a lot of us that thought that either Cole or Joe was going to go next. But I think kind of starting to see the seeds of this 7 alliance start to crumble is really exciting. And I know that I kind of keep saying this every week where it's like, okay, next week it's going to get really good. Or like later on, it's going to get really good. And I think we really are on this precipice of, okay, Ben is, his leadership is starting to falter with people questioning him. You know, Chrissy and Ashley are mad at him. You know, Ryan is kind of messing up, going and telling both Devin and Ben about his idol, and then Devin and Ben are coming together. You know, Lauren still has her advantage. So I think that this is going to set us up for something that's going to be exciting. And I think the anticipation, at least for me in this episode, was really great.
Mm-hmm. Dom, what did you think about the anticipation overall, the general feeling of this episode?
I liked it. It must have been fairly hard for them to sell and to put together, because you have this moment at the end, which is meant to be exciting, right? Like Mike plays an idol at Tribal Council and it ends up falling flat. Mike is not a showman in the way that Joe is, or that some of the other great characters that we've seen are. He mainly expresses himself through these convoluted analogies. So he goes for this amazing play. It doesn't work out. It ends up being not so amazing in the end. But it doesn't feel exciting. You don't feel, oh my God, that was amazing, I have to tell everyone about this. It's just, okay, that just kind of fizzled out, right? And so given that, it's hard to build suspense over the course of the episode when you know that the outcome is not going to pay off that well. So given that, I think they did a really good job. As Liana said, there's a lot of stuff here which there's no immediate payoff, but I think a few weeks down the line, we're going to see that come into play. So the various scenes of Ben coming across as dictatorial, or Ryan telling everyone about the idol in his pants, eventually, I think that's going to come out to bite both of them. We're not going to see it just yet, but it's laying the groundwork now. And so I think given everything they had to work with and given everything they're setting up for future weeks, they still managed to make it pretty exciting.
This episode was so interesting to me because it feels like, I don't know if I want to use the term secondary characters, but it feels like they shed more light on people that might not have gotten the brunt of the screen time in the past 8 episodes. And it's interesting because to sort of balance that out, the person that we're about to talk about, this week's boot, Cole, I think for being such a big presence, both literally and figuratively, in the first 8 episodes, really actually was not in much of this episode at all. I feel like if you're going to the healers, Joe and Mike got much more screen time than he did. But overall, you have people like Dr. Mike, like Ashley, like Devin, who all got major storylines this week when they might not have gotten a lot, or They've gotten screen time before, but not nearly as much as your Bens and your Chrissies and your Ryans. And so I don't know how exactly that bodes for their winning chances, but it helps satisfy, you know, what I want to see in the Survivor season, which is really I want to see each person sort of have an individual story arc and how it plays into the overall story arc of the season. So I'm happy that it satisfies that. Like you guys said, the outcome, much like last week, was, and 2 weeks ago even, was pretty obvious on paper, but I do give the show credit for at least making an entertaining piece, entertaining 42 minutes to sort of satisfy that, you know, inevitable outcome.
There are people who, what they want from a Survivor season is just Cole on the screen in various different poses, and I don't know if they were that satisfied with this episode, but for the rest of us, yeah, I think even though Cole... It's weird to like under-edit the boot when the whole point of the episode is them leaving is meant to be exciting, but somehow they managed to make it work.
Well, Cole has always been this sort of NPC type player, I feel like, in this game, where everybody just kind of has to play around him and play with him. Like, we never really see him, you know, being a moving force within the game. Like, he's just sort of part of the story, right? Because he's like, you know, he'll help Joe, and then, you know, he'll, like, I guess maybe apart from him telling secrets, but it's always been about how Jessica handles him, how Mike, you know, interacts with him. It's never really about Cole himself. So it actually, it's kind of funny that he didn't really get, you know, we didn't get a lot from his perspective as terms with this episode with him going home. Part of that also was just that, you know, the boot wasn't super exciting, and Mike's, you know, idol play wasn't super exciting. So that's what I think for me, it's like watching the other seven interact and kind of watching their interactions. That was what was more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to use this in a demeaning way whatsoever, because this is one of the things I liked about Cole, but he's sort of a Survivor child, considering all of his storylines are around him misbehaving, between him telling secrets or him eating too much food and promptly getting punished as a result from his fellow tribe members. Cole's age and the way that incorporates into the game is so interesting to me, because it cuts both ways. Because he's so young and as a result more inexperienced than somebody like Ben, I think that might be a reason as to why he sort of got on the nerves of his other tribe members. He just didn't know any better. But then on the other side of that, because he's so young, he's also willing to change because of that. There was something really interesting in his Ponderosa video that I'm hoping to talk with him about. Mm-hmm. By the way, because of the holiday, Exit Press will be done on Monday, which is the day after we're recording this. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, you should have my exit interview as well as Rob's, Josh's, Dalton's, etc. to enjoy at your fingertips. But it seems like he was willing to take this experience and use it to fundamentally change himself as a person. So I'm excited to talk to him about that, as well as what his game plan was, because I do agree with you, Liana. He was more so a factor to be dealt with rather than a person to incorporate in with the deals. But that being said, I like this idea from a character perspective of someone like Cole, the quote unquote golden boy, who isn't as golden as you would initially think.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know where I heard this, but someone, I think in one of the exit interviews, made a comparison along those lines, saying that Jessica and Cole were like the children in this dysfunctional family, in the Healers, and Mike and Joe were almost like the couple who in the sitcom who had to somehow keep their kids in check and stop them from getting too much attention. Maybe it's a lazy comparison because everyone's been making it, but I do see shades of like Joe Anglim in Cole, where they never get to be this fully actualized character, because everything about them is just everyone else talking about how scary they are, and you never really get to hear their perspective or them having agency within the game.
Yeah, that's actually, I mean, that's a good point. And I think also, you know, Cole, he lost, what, two total challenges in his Survivor career, I think, right? With combination of all the immunities and rewards. And so, you know, he just does get painted with this. I mean, even though we didn't see it, I guess, as much, but, you know, the challenge competitor brush, which is why they sent him home, you know, because he lost immunity to Lauren this week. And then, like, that's why he was a threat. So it was like a combination of him just being a challenge beast and then eating a lot, right? Those are the only two things I really know about Cole.
Yeah, it's very true. Well, speaking of Cole, this segues perfectly into our weekly time capsule predictions. Liana, what did you have to say about how Cole did before the season started?
Okay, so I had Cole making the merge, and this is what I wrote about Cole. Hello, Merge Boot, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. after being the leader of the Healers tribe, Cole finds himself the target of both the remaining heroes and hustlers, especially Patrick as a rival dude bro. His edit will be spectacular, and he will be predicted to be the Golden Boy winner of the season. After being voted out, fans will suggest he put together a GoFundMe for a new van, but Cole is out in the wilderness therapizing children, does not have access to a computer, so that idea never comes to fruition.
Wow, I didn't know you predicted the wand off, Liana, by submitting a song parody even before the season started.
Yeah. I even have in my notes, sing this, please. So I like that I was very polite to my future self. Like, please, can you do this, please?
Yeah, I hope. Can that song parody play over your like PSA about deforestation in Fiji? Just combine all of your weird tangents into one.
Yeah.
All right, so I also had Cole making the jury. Here's what I have to say. Cole becomes the Coley Amazing to his tribe, with his outdoor experience earning favor with the healers and simultaneously the ire of guys like Mike and Joe, the latter of which was probably hopeful he could be his own Joey Amazing. Once the merge hits, he may pull off a couple of clutch challenge wins, but his coarse hands will fail him in some more dexterity-based competitions. As soon as he's vulnerable, his target becomes as big as his stature, and he falls hard. So, Dom is our guest this week. It is your call. Which one of us had the more accurate prediction? Slash, I guess, at this point, which one of you did something outside of this game that pissed you off to the point of where you could give the point to the other person? Because apparently that's a judging criteria now.
Well, given that there was no musical number on Mike's part, I think the better Cole in this case has to go to Liana.
What?
Yay! I mean, it's true. Mine was better. So,
all right. I guess I'll have to prepare a tap number for Joe next week.
Be sure to get your jazz hands ready.
My Josie hands. I'll do a nice little bit to that. Congratulations, Liana. You're up a significant number of points. I guess now pomp and circumstance will prevail here. What do we have up next on deck in discussion of this episode?
Okay, so we just came up with this concept, and it was honestly just so silly and so ridiculous. There's no way we couldn't do it. So, as you may know, the immunity challenge this week was called Squatty Propst, which is hilarious in and of itself. But what we've done is I've prepared a game called Squatty Propst or Squatty Potty. So it's up to you to identify whether or not this line was said by Jeff Propst during the Squatty Propst immunity challenge or was said during or in a Squatty Potty commercial. So Dom, you'll be playing against the house, or Mike in this case. And what I'll do is I will read you a line from either a Squatty Potty commercial or from Jeff Probst. And it's going to be up to you to identify which one it came from. Does that make sense?
Dom, do they have Squatty Potty in the UK? Yeah, is this a product you're aware of?
But we don't. Richard Hatch's marketing team hasn't reached this far, unfortunately. But I was expecting, in the same vein that we had the Outback Steakhouse just relentless advertising a few weeks ago, I thought we were going to have Richard Hatch from stage left coming in bearing a Squatty Potty just to demonstrate. Well, maybe not demonstrate, but to really show it off to the audience.
Right. Yes, Richard Hatch's outreach with the Squatty Potty is not as widespread as his sperm, perhaps.
Oh my. Yes. Well, so for those of you who don't know, the Squatty Potty is this essentially this product. It's like a stool thing that it allows you to raise your legs because humans are built to excrete waste in a particular position that is helped by squatting. So yeah, we're really classy here at the B&B.
It's a stool thing in more ways than one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stool to help your stool. Now, Liana, as our requisite by default medical expert on this podcast, is this actual factual? Is this actually improve excrement?
Well, I've never tried it myself, but I mean, there have been studies that have been done that have shown that there seems to be some benefit from the Squatty Potty. But honestly, just eat more fiber. Really, just eat more fiber and you'll be fine. But yeah, that being said, on Survivor, there's not a lot of fiber out there to be had unless you want to just be eating plants.
I was just saying, I don't know. I've heard interesting things about those Fijian coconuts. That's definitely has people clamoring for Squatty Potties. Maybe they could offer that as a reward and have people sort of like groan in ecstasy over it, like some sort of coffee or chocolate cake.
Oh my God, can you imagine? This is the laxatives reward. Coconuts and coffee. Enjoy. Yes, that would go over well.
I think that should be a secret scene on CBS.com of the aftermath of any food reward, just seeing people jolt into the jungle and then reemerge looking ashamed a few minutes later.
I always do wonder about that because we only get it from time to time. But, you know, I mean, after not eating, then all of a sudden ingesting a bunch of food, like your body's not ready to handle it. Anyway, they obviously need Squatty Potty as a reward. Okay, so we're going to start this ridiculous game. So Dom, you're going to go first. So I'm going to read you a line and you're going to tell me whether or not it's Squatty Potty or Probst.
Okay.
What happens when you go from a sit to a squat?
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so generic though. That could be anything.
Yeah, that's the name of the game.
I'm going to say this is Squatty Potty because I feel like Probst, that's just not the way he tends to set things up. It's more, there's no like introduction in that way. He just gets right into it. So I'm going to say Squatty Potty and that's the hill I'm going to die on.
You are correct. And I love the logic behind this ridiculous situation.
But that's like every commercial starts with this somewhat semi-rhetorical question, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect way to, if I was making a Squatty Potty commercial, which sadly I've not had the chance to do yet, this is how I would lead it in.
Okay, well, that's good. I don't know. Hey, maybe you should just, you should pitch them. They're all about mythical creatures that seem to have bowel issues. So there's like a unicorn and a mermaid and then there's this lord guy who seems to be obsessed with mythical creatures and their bowel movements. It's very bizarre.
Are we going to have King Arthur with severe diarrhea as the center point?
The time traveling King
Arthur. Yeah, King Arthur is so constipated, he's acting so dictatorial, ordering his allies around. All he needs is a Squatty Potty, and he can let Chrissy and Ashley do the talking for once.
Yeah, he can time travel to the era of Squatty Potty and pick one up. Okay, Mike, you're up next. Here's your quote. You're already in a very uncomfortable position.
Ooh, I feel like that's gotta be Probst.
Yes, that is correct. Okay. Dom, you're up. Any kind of relief feels so good.
This is even harder than the first one. I'm going to say Probst because this is exactly the kind of thing he would say mid-challenge when everyone is just dying in agony. But his life is fine. He doesn't need to worry about it. And I can imagine him saying this. So I'm going to go with Probst.
That is correct. Okay, Mike, is that the best thing you've ever had in your life?
Oh. See, now when I'm thinking Squatty Potty commercials, I'm thinking about that aforementioned unicorn one where it was pooping out like rainbow ice cream. And I feel like maybe a character said that at some point. What's the quote again?
Is that the best thing you've ever had in your life?
Yeah, I don't know what Probst would be referring to in the challenge because he wasn't offering food rewards during this one. So that would have made sense. So I'm going to go with Squatty Potty.
Nice. That's correct. You guys are killing it so far. Well done. This is definitely an accolade that you can put on your resume. Okay, Dom, you're up next. If you go too high, you're in trouble.
This has to be Probst, right? Because in the challenge, you're meant to be lifting this thing or maintaining it in a certain place. I don't know when you would even say this in the context of a... Well, I do know, but we don't need to get into the graphic details. But I think it's more likely to be in a challenge. So I think for the third time or second time, I'm going to say Probst.
Yes, that is correct. Okay, Mike, you may be thinking, I don't have a problem.
You may be thinking, I don't have a problem. That's something Jeff Probst could have said even outside of the challenge, just about life. You might be thinking that I don't have a problem.
Yeah, this is a Jeff Probst talk show coming back.
Yes, exactly. Is there a third option if it's the Jeff Probst talk show quote?
Yeah, right. This is actually a trick question.
Yes, a literal sit down with the event Nicole Brown over Squatty Potties. All right, I'm going to go with Squatty Potty because like going with Dom's logic from the very first question, this definitely feels like one of those like rhetorical statements that you would put into an infomercial that would show at 3 a.m.
It is very true. All right. Squatty Potty it is. All right. So I have one left for each of you. So Dom, your quote is, look what happens when you squat.
That feels so obviously Squatty Potty that I want to say that it's Probst again, but I might just be out thinking myself here. I'm going to say Probst. I'm going to stick with it.
It was Squatty Potty.
No. I've been training my whole life for this moment, and I fell at the final hurdle.
Oh, that's such is life.
Put him pinch
maybe
it
you
out.
Can time travel. Just drop it. Okay, Mike, your last quote is, for the first time, showing some real movement.
Ooh, I feel like, I think he, from what I remember, I believe Prope said that about Cole or Chrissy. So I know, even though you were trying to trick me with the Squatty Potty and the double entendre with the movement, I'm not taking that bait. I'm involving that hook entirely. Give me Squatty Propst.
That is correct. Well, congratulations, Mike. You can say that you were the first winner of Squatty Propst or Squatty Potty.
Though, I mean, Dom is number two, so that therefore makes him the true winner, right?
Actually the real winner, yeah. Exactly. It was very difficult to find Squatty Potty lines without the word poop or colon in them. So this is the best I could do. But we had to play it.
I don't know how many rhetorical flourishes you found in these Squatty Potty commercials, but you did a good job.
Could you get rid of the un in coal? And that would probably make things a little bit harder to distinguish.
Oh, that's what I should have done. If I could have edited it some way. But there were a lot of Propst lines that I thought could be good. So he had, like, in an attempt to find relief, he feels very comfortable in how far he can push it. She's trying to find some relief. Take a spot on your box. I thought that they were all very Ooh. Relevant quotes.
What did you guys think about the immunity challenge overall? They touted it as this new challenge. Jeff even said it's like a new survivor torture device. What did you think about it just as a challenge overall?
I think that it's something unique. It's not particularly exciting, but, you know, neither is standing on the balance beam and holding up the little idol with a stick. So, you know, I think that in the vein of endurance challenges, I think that this is very on par. And I mean, it's something new. Like, I'm just trying to think of any other challenge where they've had to stay in a squat position, right? I mean, I feel like it's always balancing something or like holding onto the rope and leaning back. I don't know. I can't think of any squatting.
The two that really, and again, this is maybe the old school fan in me that it really reminded me of, were actually the back-to-back final immunity challenges in Thailand. And I think it was in Amazon as well. The one that unfortunately did in our big boss, Rob Cesternino, where in Thailand, I believe it was like, you had to stand in that excruciating squatting pose by holding on to gold coins.
Oh,
I think in the Amazon
right, yeah.
challenge, you had to squat and hold the headdress above your head. So that's what it really reminded me of. And as someone who has also been through fraternity hazing, I've done many, many squats and wall sits in my lifetime that it brought back horrible memories for me.
Were there any Squatty Potties involved in this hazing, or did
no,
you not go quite that far?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Different fraternities might have gotten us more involved with what was in the Squatty Potty after using it.
You don't remember that part of the evening anymore.
No, it's blocked out of my memory.
I thought it was an interesting challenge, although I buy watching it that it was painful to go through, but as a viewer, all I see is they're standing in the same place for a while and you see them wincing and you can tell that they're in pain, but you don't get a sense of this is how arduous it is to go through. Whereas some of these other challenges, you can tell it. This is physically strenuous and anyone who's there is going to be just exhausted and in agony by the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I don't know, though. I mean, maybe the, you know, like having to stand on, you know, balance and then hold your hands above your head. Like that one, I can see the pain. So I can like tell that they're going through pain. But, you know, the one where they had to balance the one that Cole won last week, the one with the stick and the balance beam, like that one, I don't know. I feel like that's similar. Like I couldn't really tell that they were in pain, I guess.
P.S. The totally tangential to this, I forgot to bring this up last week. I'm pretty sure that the challenge they did last week, and they did it in Millennials versus Gen X too, it's like the horizontal version of the one that Dom's favorite Russell won in Survivor Samoa, where you had to stack the pieces of pole on top of each other and hold the idol up. I wonder if it was because I think that was the challenge in Cambodia where Joey Amazing got medevaced. I wonder if they said, all right, let's just turn this 90 degrees and we should be able to prevent that type of medical emergency.
They should try that with all their challenges. Just rotate it 90 degrees and see what happens.
Yeah, Liana, as our vet / doctor / whatever else in resident, is that how it works? Is it medically?
Oh, that if you just turn something 90 degrees, it'll be okay.
Right. I don't know how no one thought of this before, but I think they cracked the code. They cured cancer.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, we were just looking at it the wrong way. That makes sense. Well, I don't know. You probably want to talk to, you know, Dr. Mike or the Squatty Potty people to get a real answer about the 90 degree issue.
Much like the Squatty Potties, the challenge team needs to figure out the proper pose to get, you know, the most out of your experience.
That's right. Well, it is about the angle in one of the commercials, because now I know a lot about Squatty Potty. It's all about the angle that your legs form with your torso. So, you know, it's all about the 90 degrees.
Note to people who are in Secret Santas with Liana. I know what you can expect underneath your tree this year.
Oh, Lord. I'm going to end up with like 4 Squatty Potties.
Well, let's get into another game here. I like to call thankful tweets. Now, with the American Thanksgiving holiday passing over this past week, a bunch of Survivor alumni had their various experiences and were tweeting about what they're thankful for. So, Dom, Liana, you two are going to compete against each other. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a multiple choice question about something that a former Survivor posted on social media about Thanksgiving. I'll give you 4 choices. We're using the honor system here. You each write down your answer, and then we'll reveal it one at a time. Dom, I got to ask, as someone who is not American, how do you look upon the big holiday of Thanksgiving from an outsider's perspective?
I take an almost like patronizing attitude towards it, as in, oh, it's very cute that they get to enjoy themselves for the day. I guess there's some hidden jealousy there that we don't have that ourselves. But I guess we haven't had to cast off the shackles of an oppressive empire yet. So when we do, I'm sure we'll get our own day to commemorate it.
Yeah, but you've colonized lots of indigenous people. I feel like there could be Thanksgivings like pretty much every week.
Yeah, that's true, although it's kind of the wrong direction, I guess. But yeah. I will take any public holiday they want to put in place. I'll gladly sign up for.
I also really like this concept of if you're jealous or envious of something, just like patronize them. I think I'm going to start using that. I like it.
Oh, your house is so big. Oh, you're good for you.
Good for you. Oh, must take a lot to clean.
Yes. For this, who needs therapy when you have that coping mechanism? All right. So again, I'll ask you a question, give you 4 options. You'll each write down your choice and we'll see who is correct and who is incorrect. Let's start with question number 1 here. It was a special Thanksgiving for Ozzy Luth, who got to meet a certain someone for the very first time and left him, quote unquote, full of all the thanks. So who was this person that Ozzy got to meet for the first time? A, his nephew. B, his new agent. C, his number one fan. D, that kid from the Survivor South Pacific reunion who said he was inspired by the way Ozzy climbed trees.
Oh my goodness, what?
So each of you lock in your choices. Let me know when you're ready to go. Again, A, his nephew. B, his new agent. C, his number one fan. D, that kid from the Survivor South Pacific reunion who said he was inspired by the way that Ozzy had climbed trees.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, I'm good.
All right, Dom, what did you put?
So I'm going to say it's A, Ozzy's nephew. I wanted to say D, but I feel like that kid by now is some jaded teenager who has no idols in the world anymore. And they say never meet your heroes. And I feel like if he did meet Ozzy, that gloss might fade away. So for both of their sakes, I'm going to say A.
So I had a very similar logic. I also wanted to go with the agent because I thought that was funny. But I also went with A.
All right. I gave you an easy one. You were both correct. Ozzy did indeed meet his nephew for the first time, which gave him full of all the thanks. I also was going to go with an option E, his distributor, but I want to keep things somewhat family friendly on this podcast.
Yeah, because that's what we go for. We just played a game called Squatty Props or Squatty Potty. But I get where the line is.
All right. So you each have a question, right? As we move into question 2, Andrea Belke, guest from a couple of weeks ago, tweeted, "Happy Thanksgiving. What are you thankful for? I am thankful that at blank, you can drink at any time and nobody questions it. What is the word in that blank? A, airports. B, bars. C, carpools. D, the DMV." "I am thankful that at blank, you can drink at any time and nobody questions it." It's either airports, bars, carpools, or the DMV.
Okay, I got my answer.
Okay, I'll lock it in.
All right, Liana, what have you got?
Okay, so I know that she was traveling around Thanksgiving, so I'm going to say A, the airport.
Dom?
So I was thinking about the tragic accident that befell her recently, and I didn't know if these two are connected in some way. I don't know if you can smuggle horses into airports or to DMVs. So I'm assuming there's no relation there, and I'm just going to say the DMV for lack of a better option.
All right. Liana is correct. I'm sorry, Dom. Andrea was not sneaking anything into the DMV. Airports are correct. Airports, you can drink it anytime and nobody questions it. Dom, I know you also mentioned the accident that Andrea got in before. Her hearts are with her at this time, but at least she had something to subsist on prior to landing in her home for Thanksgiving.
Can you drink at the hospital at any time?
There are no bars in the hospital.
There's no hospital. That's why people hate hospitals.
Yeah, exactly. So, Liana, you're up 2-1 as we move into question 3. Which Massachusetts Survivor alum posted, quote, "Happy Thanksgiving, everyone, from the state where the holiday began"? A, Julia Sokolowski. B, Jeremy Collins. C, Brett LaBelle. D, Jimmy T from Nicaragua.
Who would care enough about the history of Thanksgiving to tweet about something like that?
Good question.
All right, I think I have my answer.
Okay, yeah, I've made my choice.
All right, Dom, what have you got?
So I'm going to say Brett LaBelle. I don't know who in general either knows enough of the history or cares enough about it to tweet about it, but I think Brett falls in that intersection pretty cleanly, so I'm going to say Brett.
Okay, I was thinking that Brett would not tweet about the history of Thanksgiving, so I actually went with B. I went with Jeremy.
All right, well, Liana, you underestimate the history skills of one
what?
Brett LaBelle. Brett is indeed the correct answer.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, good on Brett. I do feel like of all the people, Brett is probably the most vocal about the fact that he is a Massachusetts person. I don't know if he's doing that to intentionally clamor for a Boston know-it-alls come spring. But yeah, Brett was the one to pull out the, yeah, you know, we were the ones to first have pilgrims come over, you know?
I can hear it, his accent.
He's angling for a shot on the eventual Boston versus Britain season.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, season 52.
What instead of a marooning, they just throw tea crates into the water?
That's actually the only supplies that they're going to get.
Yeah, I don't know how we fill out this Brit tribe. Maybe it's just Ace's entire family, but I'd be in for that, honestly.
Very questionable background, Ace's family. So I think they were, he said they were, oh, we were raised all around the world. Very dubious past for Mr. Ace Gordon. All right, we're all tied up here as we move into question number 4. Though Chase Rice of Survivor Nicaragua had 280 characters to express his thanks over the course of the holiday, he only used 3 words in his tweet. Football, turkey, and what? A, family. B, beer. C, music. D, Fabio.
I like that this is sort of the Mad Libs country song thing that we're playing.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's workshopping lyrics.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay, all right, I think I have my answer.
I think this is the toughest one, but yeah, I've got my answer.
All right, Liana, what have you got?
Okay, all right, so it was a toss-up between family and music, but I ended up going with music.
Dom?
Yeah, I also ended up going with music, so no chance to gain any points there.
You underestimate the value of a good PBR. Beer was the correct answer.
Wow.
Oh, I should have known. He's got all the fans, so, you know, like, it's got to be beer, like, you know, feet and, you know, toes in the sand, those types of things.
Yeah, beer is what leads you to get weird. So it's a, you know, it's a real connective tissue. So unfortunately, not a correct answer from either one of you. We are still tied 2-2. As we move into question 5, Woo had a nice week with family in honor of the holiday. One of the things that Wu posted was a video where he roundhouse kicked what? A, a turkey. B, a cutout of Jeff Probst. C, a family member. D, Santa Claus.
Poor Santa. You know, it's funny. So I was at the gym the other day and Wu has been in a bunch of commercials. So this one was for MasterCard or something like that. And of course, me with no regard for anything that's going on around me, I just pointed at the TV and I went, "Hey." And then I realized that I said it out loud in the middle of the gym. It was very embarrassing.
Dom, what answer do you have? What did Wu roundhouse kick in one of his videos?
So I was hoping there would be the Ian Terry answer of himself, but failing that, I'm going to say the cardboard cutout of Jeff Probst.
No, he was not that popular in Korea because Wu has not mastered the art of kicking himself in the face. Liana, what did you put?
Well, he needs to have the commercials, you know, like there, right? I mean, he just really needs to branch out. So I actually also said the cutout of Jeff Probst.
The correct answer is Santa Claus.
What? How dare he?
There's like a mural, I guess like a holiday mural where Santa Claus is painted on it. And Wu just like flat out does a kick to the chalk outline or a chalk figure of Santa. It's even subtitled saying, oh, sorry, Santa.
This is all the war on Christmas. You know, first Starbucks with the red cups and now Wu kicking Santa. I see how it is.
What's next? Did you guys know that Wu has a connection to Christmas outside of that that I don't think anyone really talks about in the Survivor community?
To Christmas from BB19 or actual Christmas?
No, it's just no. Christmas would not be able to roundhouse kick anything anytime soon. No, no. Wu was actually in a movie from 2012 before his time in Cagayan called Santa's Summer House, in which I guess a bunch of people get lost in the middle of California and wind up in Santa's summer home, and Wu is in that movie.
Oh my god, that sounds awful. I have to watch it right away.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome. I have to watch it right away.
Good. Now we have the two sides of the Rotten Tomatoes argument against Santa's Summer House.
Oh my god, yeah, talk about the war on Christmas.
I don't know if you guys have the same dynamic in the States, but over here, we've had this trend of Christmas decorations and sales and so on becoming a thing earlier and earlier in the year. And there are lots of people who react quite violently against that. So I don't know if this is Wu playing his part in that, deciding any sighting of Santa before December is just not going to be tolerated and taking matters into his own hands.
Well, if you're going to see Santa before December, he has to be in his summer home in California. Obviously.
All right, so I found the storyline here on IMDb. Let's take some time to read through exactly what Santa's Summer House is about. A group of six lost tourists and their van driver find their way to an elegant hilltop mansion where they are invited to stay for the weekend by an eccentric and overly cheerful middle-aged couple who introduce themselves as Nana and Pop.
I'm pretty sure that this is also the start of the plot of any horror movie ever.
Yeah, this could be like a slash fest without even knowing it, a backdoor slash fest Christmas movie. They soon reveal themselves as the actual Santa Claus and his wife, whom spend their summers away. I'm pretty sure that's a wrong use of the word whom. Spend their summers away from the North Pole at their summer house in Southern California. Everyone, except for teenager Andy, who is dealing with his bickering and workaholic parents, Dean and Sadie, is skeptic to Nana and Pop's claims. During the weekend, Nana and Pop try to open up their guests to brightness and positivity to better their lives to find the true meaning of happiness.
Oh man, screw watching A Christmas Story, any of the other holiday movie traditions that we have, this one's going in the roster. I love it.
Yeah, I might have to put in a proposition to Rob to have him cover this movie. But now I'm confused because I'm also looking, and the tagline for this movie is, even the toughest action stars in the world have a soft spot in their hearts for Christmas.
What?
That description did not mention anything about action movie stars coming to Santa's house.
Well, that's bizarre. Wait, who are they? They're teenagers or something?
So there's one teenager whose parents, I guess, are in the midst of a marital crisis. But I guess the rest of them are also action stars.
Well, we know Wu gave the roundhouse kick to Santa, so I mean, he's pretty much an action star, so maybe that's where it comes into play.
That is so strange.
That is very bizarre.
And he plays a character named Mike, so who knows? Maybe he decides to just declare himself the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, man. Okay, well, what happens to the elves and the reindeer? Do they have to stay up in the North Pole?
I don't know. I guess that's a matter for you to find out as you watch Santa's Summer House, now available on, I don't know, Crackle or something like that. Like,
where can I download it from?
It's not you mean this isn't on Netflix?
What's it called? Santa's Summer Home?
Santa's Summer House. It's probably on like Bletflix, like the off-brand Netflix that they use for like all the movies that weren't able to accept the Netflix bid.
Yeah, Santa's Summer Home is a sequel after he decides he just likes it better in California than in the North Pole and decides to live there permanently. And then he just ruins Christmas to everyone in the process.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, who would want to go back to the North Pole after living in Southern California?
It's true. No one. And maybe maybe that's a pivotal decision that Santa faces. But let's not act like these 90s action stars and stay in Santa's summer house for now. Let's get back to the game at hand. We are still tied up 2-2 as we go into the last two questions here. Francesca Hoagie said she was thankful for author J.K. Rowling after Rowling posted a particular food-related tweet. What did this food-related tweet involve from J.K. Rowling? A, that Voldemort would hate the very idea of a turducken. B, she threatened to block someone who said that they hated mac and cheese in another tweet. C, saying that cranberries were one of Dumbledore's favorite holiday treats. D, saying that eating rocks is actually a great way to curb your appetite. What would Francesca appreciate about J.K. Rowling in terms of her food opinions?
Thanks. I like that. Okay, so let me just think this through. Let me just apply logic to what Francesca would appreciate about J.K. Rowling. Okay, all right. I have my answer.
Okay, let's do it.
All right, Dom, what have you got?
Okay, so I know it's far too obvious, but I'll be the sucker. I'll play along. I'll say D.
You think that J.K. Rowling tweeted that eating rocks is a good way to curb your appetite?
No, I don't know, man. I don't follow her on Twitter. She could be tweeting anything. I wouldn't know about it.
That's true.
Okay, well, I didn't necessarily go with rocks. Instead, I was thinking, okay, J.K. Rowling, I'll stick with the Dumbledore thing. So I said C.
You are both incorrect. The answer is B. She appreciated that J.K. Rowling threatened to block someone and report them on Twitter because they said they didn't like mac and cheese.
Wow, that's pretty harsh for not liking macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, I mean, I guess drew enough of an opinion for Francesca to really like it. I mean, I could see where Dom is coming from. Like, if you didn't follow Francesca, maybe she's promoting like new age solutions, like eat a rock every day and you'll be able to lose weight because there'll be more weight in your stomach and you'll eat much less as a result.
Yeah, I can see that product on Goop now, actually. It's the $600 bag of rocks. Consume one a day for weight loss.
I will say, though, a stone will be pretty hard to pass. You'll definitely need a squatty potty to get all of that out.
Right, yeah. Well, they're smaller. Well, I guess I can see that. Maybe mac and cheese was Voldemort's favorite food. Like, maybe I'm trying to remember that, if that was in the book somewhere.
Yes, you forgot about the Death Eater's mac and cheese party that they had in the middle of Order of the Phoenix. All right, final question here. Again, we're tied up 2-2, so either one of you can win it at this question. Billy Garcia wished a happy Thanksgiving and showed he was, of course, a true social media mogul by tagging like 7 different users in the picture that he posted. In his tweet about Thanksgiving, how many hashtags did Billy Garcia use? A, 3, B, 5, C, 7, D, 10. So either 3, 5, 7, or 10 hashtags that Billy used.
All right, I got my answer.
Okay, I got mine.
All right, Liana, for all the marbles, what'd you put?
Okay, I went with C.
Went with 7?
7, yeah.
Dom?
I decided no half measures. Billy Garcia used 10 hashtags, at least.
Well, might as well call Francesca, because we might as well have gone to rocks. You were both incorrect. The correct answer is 5. Billy Garcia used 5 hashtags in his tweet. He used hashtag Happy Thanksgiving, hashtag Macy's Day Parade, hashtag Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, hashtag Thankful, hashtag Happy Thanksgiving 2017.
Now, that's some great SEO from Billy Garcia, though.
Yeah, really casting a wide net.
Well, you know, if you want your tweet to gain some traction, you gotta just throw that net out.
Well, I don't have a tiebreaker, so congratulations. You both win at this point. I'm very thankful to both of you who went through that very difficult and somewhat confusing quiz.
I enjoyed it. There were so many I didn't know the answer to, but I had fun nonetheless.
That's all that matters.
That's right. Now I know that J.K. Rowling loves macaroni and cheese, so I'm sure that information will come in handy in my life, of course. Okay, well, now we've gone through Survivor social media, we're going to play a game that is based off of the Newlywed Game. So, Dom, I know you and Colin have been podcasting together since, I think, what, 2011? So like 6 years now. So I know you're kind of past the honeymoon phase. But what I've done is I messaged Colin and I asked him to respond to 7 different questions, to give his answer to 7 questions. So Dom, it's up to you to guess what Colin said in response to these questions.
God.
I know. And we can play with him when he was on. But don't worry, if we ever have him back, we'll torture him equally.
Yeah, I like this. This is like we're like the teenager Andy from Santa's Summer House watching a prospective podcast couple fall apart before our very eyes.
That's a good deep cut there, Mike.
That's classic reference. Well, yeah, we're trying to not, you know, make any waves, but hopefully your relationship will be stronger after this, but we'll see. So your first question is, who did Colin say has the most win equity after this most recent episode?
Is that a multiple choice? Nope. Or is the entire field in play here? Wow.
Well, it's all the people that are left. So I guess it technically is a multiple choice. If you like me, I can read off all the people that are left in the season.
So I know we have both been on the King Ben train from the beginning, but he seems like one of these Devon hipsters who's now seeing something that I'm not seeing. He's in on the joke, but I'm not. So I'm going to say Devon.
That is correct.
Wow.
I like the idea of calling him a Devon hipster.
Wait, so is that the term for like Devon stans or Devon hipsters?
Yeah, Devon hipsters. Because it's like, it's too cool. Like you wouldn't get it, but Devon's definitely going to win. Okay. The next question is, who did Colin say is the next boot?
The next boot. Yeah. This is another thing where, of course, it's Joe, but then, of course, that means it can't be Joe. So, and you just end up going in circles for hours. I'm just going to say Joe. I'm going to keep it simple.
You were close. So he said Mike solely because I spent the last few weeks convinced Joe will find the third idol. So,
okay, that's a good call. Yeah. I could see Joe finding it and just misplaying it, not playing it, doing something wrong. Like there's a lot of room for him to mess up.
Okay, well, good. You can debate with him later on that.
Yeah, don't debate with him through our podcast. You have an entirely different podcast to do.
Well,
that.
Well, no. That's how it works, right? That's what we learned. That's how you communicate with people. I think it was Colin, right, who was trying to talk to Paul through the podcast. So, Dom, this is your opportunity.
We're merely a vessel. Yes, we'll be possessed with the spirit of Colin.
In the spirit of Love Actually, it's like when he writes on those boards and holds them up, except it's just via ROTP B&B appearances instead. It's a very antiquated and slow form of communication, but it's what we've got used to.
To me, Dom, you are perfect.
you too, Mike.
Oh, that's adorable. Just so much love here at the B&B. Okay, so the third question is, what food would Colin want to win in a reward?
Oh, God. So I don't even know where to start with this. is there a hint? Is there, can I buy a clue?
Give him a food group.
Right. So he actually gave 2 answers. One is a drink and the other one is a solid food.
Okay, for the drink, I can lock this in. This is going to be iced coffee.
Yeah, that's correct. he said iced coffee would be my number one overall nourishment reward.
And then the food, honestly, could be anything. I tend to zone out when he's talking about that kind of stuff. But it's at least I got half points for that question.
That's right. Yeah, we'll give you full credit. So for solid food, he said he would pick steak. And then he wrote in all caps, ribeye? ! So
I love that that's become a thing now. A year ago, we had Will Wall's big milk reaction. Milk. And now we have Ben jumping for joy for ribeye. I just love, yeah. I think we need like a video reaction of all the Survivor players reacting to food, including all the times that Amber said, oh my God, it's so good to every food reward she went on.
Well, as long as Aubrey's is in there with the coleslaw, then I'll be happy.
And what was the one from Game Changers? It was like eggs.
So no, the answer was not eggs. It was ribeye. But moving on to question number 4, what was Colin's favorite episode so far this season?
I feel like I should know this given that we talked about them on a podcast, but my memory does not go back quite that far. So I'm going to say the merge episode just in the dark because that's usually the most exciting. And I know that he embarrassed himself suitably at the know-it-alls concerning that episode. So that's what we're going to say.
So that was the episode where Jessica went home, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That was close. He said so many home runs to choose from, but I'll go with the Desi boot. So you were off by one. That was, okay, there's no logic. Okay, he didn't say
so,
he didn't explain.
So instead of judging what the right answer should be, I'm judging what Colin's answer actually was.
Right. Yeah. This isn't about what you think the correct answer is. This is about what Colin thinks the correct answer to be.
Ah, it's all becoming clear now.
Yeah, this is actually...
That's so random.
I don't know either.
I know, right?
This is our form of couples therapy, actually. We're trying to help you out. Okay, so question number 5. Who did Colin say would shock him the most if that person were in the final 3?
In the final 3, as opposed to winning, so that's going to change the answer quite a bit. I guess I would say Joe, because anyone else is either a solid winner, a contender, or a goat, and Joe is somewhere kind of in the middle. So I think he's a good choice.
That is correct. Colin said Joe. That's a match.
Speaking of GOAT, can we just take a second to talk about that one scene from this past episode where Joe continues to sort of go on his antagonistic path and decides to say Ashley is a GOAT and has no chance of winning the game? It's actually sort of the opposite tactic from Ben last week, where he was trying to increase the target on Ben's back by saying that he's the one who's running things, you need to take him out or he's going to win this whole thing. With Ashley, it seems like he's purposely minimizing the target by saying you have no chance to win. What do you guys think about this strategy overall?
Well, I think we saw this on the last season of Australia Survivor, right? Who is it that called?
Spoiler alert for Australian Survivor. Tune out for the next 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. 3, 2, 1. It was Lockie that called Peter a goat right before he left the game.
Right. And then I just wrote, well, Peter got really upset about that. But then I remember that Tara was like, well, you shouldn't. Goats are really smart or something like that. You should call them. What did she get? Like, you should call them sheep instead. Yeah. Thanks, Tara. I mean, it got under her skin. And I think if Joe, I'm still trying to understand whether or not Joe is just pissing people off, so now he's claiming it's his strategy, or it's actually premeditated where he's coming in with, okay, I'm going to try to piss people off. But if he knows that Ashley is maybe, self-conscious about her game that she's played so far, then that might be the way to get at her, that, oh, you haven't really done anything. And then also, if he's trying to get somebody to flip and to make a move against the 7, tailing somebody they haven't made a move might be a good way to sort of be like, hey, got to check that resume. This might be something that you should do.
Mm-hmm. Dom, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think in going around calling people goats, Joe is making himself into more of a goat, which might be the plan. But if it is, I don't know where that's really going to get him. Like we saw in this episode, Ben was dismissing it as, oh, they're just being emotional. But emotions play a big part in the way that people make decisions, and especially as part of a group. If half the alliance wants to get rid of Joe just because they're mad at him, then his attempts to climb back up from the bottom are going to be significantly hampered by that. So even if you give him enough credit to think he's just doing it intentionally, I don't think it's going to work that well.
I still think he's dead man walking, but he's doing something, I guess.
I think if you're on the bottom and you want to do that, you want to cause some chaos within that group, you want to get them to start distrusting each other, all that he's doing at the moment is making them bond over how much they hate him. So it feels like he's putting them closer together rather than dragging them apart.
It's interesting to sort of compare and contrast his plan with Mike's, where Mike is trying to do essentially what you're saying, Dom, of like, hey, yeah, I'll vote with you, and I have these relationships that hopefully can sort of needle my way in there. And who knows, I think maybe before he did this big gambit with the idol, he might have had a much better place in the game than he does now. But Joe also was very open, I think, in this episode and in the secret scene as well, about the fact that he says, I'm a very aggressive person in general, I don't play well when I'm not in power. So, I mean, good on him for realizing that. Maybe not so good on him for not being happy when he's not in power, because that causes him to play a little more erratically and much more aggressively than I think your average Survivor player would do in that situation.
But it seems convincing coming from Joe. Mike, who has been this kind of meek and mousy character for the first 21 days, if he starts suddenly acting like Joe, people won't get aggravated. They'll just get confused. And especially if he starts doing it at Tribal, they're not going to change their votes at that point. So it was kind of a weird performance from Mike.
I love this concept of, because Mike has has this, I mean, this stereotype about him. I'm sure that people have perceived him in a specific way. And then all of a sudden he's kind of like, I'm just imagining, you know, if there's, you know, you're an adult and you're, there's a kid who's trying to fight you. You just put your hand on their head and they're like swinging their arms, trying to hit you. Like, that's what I imagine Mike. Like, Mike is that kid who's just swinging his arms, throwing out weird analogies, like trying to get something to hit. And the Alliance is just like, okay, Mike, like, that's nice.
I also love the fact that of this mighty healers tribe that dominated the pre-merge, the two healers left are Joe and Mike, the guys who in the first episode, like the major storyline was that they can't stand each other and Joe is consistently targeting Mike.
Aw, how things have turned. It's cute. I think, I mean, it's, you know, it comes full circle. I think it's really interesting, but I think it also goes to show, you know, like winning those challenges early is important for guys like Mike or Joe, mm-hmm. Who now might end up having a deep run because they've been able to survive so far.
Yeah, it's a really nice contrast in personalities. I feel like Joe is the Colin to my Mike.
Do you think, okay, question number six, will Colin take offense to what you just said?
Yeah.
Well, actually, okay, while we're on just a tangent, I was thinking, okay, so when Ben was shooting the balls at the, or like tossing the balls at the reward challenge, and Jeff Probst, like, he's doing it granny style, old school Midwest. I know, I've heard of granny style, like throwing it underhand, but what is old school Midwest? Is that a thing?
I mean, Jeff's from the Midwest, so my thought was that, like, he was one of those people who assumed like, oh yeah, my Kansas is the only place that does underhand basketball shooting, when the truth is it is prevalent throughout all the course of the world. I knew that when I did my Biddy League when I was 8 years old playing basketball, that was my primary method of shooting. And that is why I did not get past the ball at all, because nobody wants to see that. But yeah, I don't know exactly what old school Midwest. I don't know if there were people in like the 1950s all shooting underhand in the NBA.
Right. Like, I'm not familiar enough with my basketball history to know if this is a thing, but I just thought that was funny. Okay, anyway, I want to make the transition, speaking of granny style, but it doesn't really make sense, but I'm going to do it anyway. So speaking of granny style, question number six, what was Colin's favorite advantage or game mechanic introduced this season?
See, again, this is a question which I should know the answer to, and I will be berated at length for not knowing the answer when we record later, but I'm going to say the episode one advantage of Ryan getting to give Pretty that one shot idol.
So Colin actually said Jessica's vote canceling advantage. He said that it had a lot of potential under different circumstances because he didn't like that it was inserted pre-merge.
That sounds like something that he would say.
Yeah, so you can argue with him about that later. Okay, the final question. Who would Colin want to be his closest ally if he were playing this season? So, and this is not just who's left in the game. It's anybody who played this season.
Oh,
but see, I don't know if you're saying that to lead me astray, given that it's, given his fondness for a certain type, I'm going to say Jessica.
Okay. So it was that's close-ish, but he actually said Rourke.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Well, the addendum to that answer was Dom won't think of Rourke and will also feel dumb in retrospect for missing it. So it's a double win.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, was it you or him that coined the term Rourkeaholic before the season started?
It was definitely him. Because I remember wishing I could take credit for it.
Okay, well, I hope that you feel dumb in retrospect, because that's what Colin wanted.
I always do.
He actually, it's funny, because he first answered Chrissy, but then he messaged me later and was like, wait, I want to change my answer, and then included that that little addendum. So, well, you got three correct answers, so that was almost right. We'll let you deal with the fallout with Colin later.
I almost passed. Right.
You almost passed. It was so close.
That's the true prize, is your fractured relationship with your podcast partner now after you did not get four questions correct.
Yeah, this is actually just Mike and I's way of sort of like breaking up all the other Survivor podcasts. So we are the only, we are the remainder that remains, if you will.
Yes, so we truly are.
That is some solid emergent gameplay right there.
That's right. Yeah, this is next level.
Speaking of Chrissy, I actually want to take this time to point people towards an online confessional, because there's been a lot of talk, I feel like actually since the very beginning of this season, about Chrissy being perceived as a quote unquote game bot and how that might have ramifications on the way she was voting people out of the game. But if you want to take a look at another side of Chrissy that we don't necessarily see every week, take a look at her confessional. It's called My Survivor Moment, where she talks about the pure ecstasy and overwhelming emotion she felt when at the reward challenge, she not only was chosen to swim, but actually ended up beating Ben. I thought it was a really nice way to see Chrissy in a different light. So again, My Survivor Moment, be sure to check that out if you want to see another side of Chrissy.
Aww. And in that scene, we also see our boy JP giving Chrissy that moral support that she found really valuable. So for as much as we poke fun at him, he does actually seem to be a pretty solid guy.
Oh, well, also his confessionals, too. Like, he's sort of, if you can get through all of the filler words and the you knows, there's some content there. Like, I think he was talking about how he was going to try to make a move with Cole eventually. Like, he would have thrown the immunity challenge to Cole to keep Cole there longer. I think he's actually playing the game.
Ooh, yeah, it's like you have to pan for gold a bit, right? There's a bunch of dirt and rocks in there that you can swallow in order if you don't want to eat dinner and, you know, curb those hunger pangs. But there are occasionally little nuggets of wisdom in there from JP, it seems.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Like, I know we haven't seen him on TV at all, possibly. Like, I'm not sure he was even at the last tribal council. They maybe just left him back at camp by accident, but he might actually be playing the game.
All right, well, let's finish things off here with our final segment of each and every week here on the BNB, the question of the week. As always, I'll read out last week's question of the week. Here's some answers from the listeners, and we'll go around the horn as well. Again, last week's question of the week, name a typical survivor reward and a place to hide an idle clue. So let's start things off with Clayton O'Dell, who says, survivors should tattoo a hidden immunity idol clue onto the backs of the loved ones. The players must win time with their loved ones to see it, or the loved ones could risk flashing a little skin. We know Terry and his wife would have found the clue. And he said, in parentheses, I guess it could be temporary. Yeah, I think it might be a bit of a bridge too far to tell people, all right, you'll come out for here for the family visit, but you're going to have to tattoo, you know, go to the tree and three paces to the left on your lower back.
Yeah, we're permanently tattooing that. I actually love this idea so much. I think it would be hilarious. I mean, I would just love to see it play out. It would have to be one of the ones where the loved one goes back to camp. And so you just put the same clue on everybody. So depending, like, regardless of who wins, you get the clue. And then you have to keep, like, everybody's around and you just have some clue on the loved one. Like, I think it would be really fascinating.
Could you imagine, though, because they always fly out more loved ones than people are in the game just because, you know, it's down to the wire of, like, who gets voted out in that spot right beforehand. Could you imagine being that loved one who flies out there, has to get a temporary tattoo, like a tramp stamp of a hidden immunity idol clue, then say, nope, sorry, you're going to have to get back on the plane. And then they have to take, like, the 12-hour flight back with that thing printed on their lower back.
At least it's temporary and not real. Otherwise, that would be even worse. Be like, yeah, I got this permanent tattoo and I never even got to see my loved one.
I would have loved it, though, if, I don't know, if like Joe's loved one got a tattoo and it was like the clues that were scraped, that were printed on the trees, because Joe would be like, honey, you got a raft printed on your back? What's that mean?
Yeah, he wouldn't get it either. He's like, ah, crap. Cole just got voted out. I don't know how to interpret this clue.
Damn it. He was my interpreter. Yeah. Kevin Clements says, hide the... actually, a few people said this in. So Kevin Clements, Gregory McBean, and the Looney one all said basically to hide the clue in the crust of a pizza reward. So really bringing a new meaning to stuffed crust pizza.
Yeah, I'm all about anything that facilitates some sort of choking hazard. So just go ahead and stick that clue right in the pizza.
Yeah, I think the closest we got to that was in Survivor Worlds Apart. I'm pretty sure there was a clue, like, in a soda bottle. And Joey Amazing tried to, like, be surreptitious with it by downing the soda bottle. But he ended up kind of, like, deep-throating the clue, which I'm sure really, like, stoked the fires of a lot of certain people in America, or America, if you will. But yeah, I think that's the only time that I think a clue has posed a choking hazard. But considering how Joe was literally cutting into the middle of the cake for a clue, I feel like it might get to that point.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, it was written on, you know, the back of the plate, I guess, for the spaghetti reward, but why not just stick it right into the food?
Yeah, I did like the moment from Joe where he was jokingly lifting up the cake and saying, the idol is hidden underneath the boat.
I couldn't tell if that was him trying to do a callback to his like bad raft read that he thought that the hidden immunity idol was like 5 feet from the raft somewhere in the ocean. But I think that's giving Joe far too much credit.
All right. So here's an idea from Dan Sinensky that's actually really interesting. This is for a randomly drawn team reward challenge after the merge to a spa away from camp. Once there, folded into each robe is an idol clue. The catch is it only has some info, and the more info you share, the easier it is to find it. Now, Dom, correct me if I'm wrong. This sounds a little bit like Scamming Horse Race, correct, from The Genius?
It definitely echoes of The Genius in some fashion, yeah. And naturally, that means I'm in love with it. So whoever submitted this, I automatically get some credit in my book.
As long as they play Bangarang at the end or during the all the reveals. But I think that that's interesting. I mean, I think that it's not an inherent decision, you know, because I think a lot of people always appreciate it when the survivors are given some sort of choice. But, you know, the idea of if it's clear that you're missing some information. So it would be cool if it was like, you know, you got every fourth word in this clue or something like that. And so you had to try to, you know, put a bunch of them together in order to actually get the clue. And then I think that might facilitate people sharing information. We'll see who they share with and whether or not somebody could actually find the idol.
And it goes back to like this overall twist of like everyone gets an idol, you know, where it's not necessarily right. One person is concentrated in all the power. It's okay, we need to. And that was sort of like the purpose, I think, when in the super idol from Ko Rong as well, right? Was like in a perfect world, you would sort of make alliances by saying, hey, I have this idol, you have this idol, we can wield this power together. So I think it's a really interesting idea. Good job, Dan.
Yeah, well, there's no choking hazard, but I still like it.
Yes, exactly. We've taken the danger out of it, which unfortunately deters a little bit in Liana's book, but still a thumbs up from her. Dominic Malpietti says, Survivor rewards from time to time involve the winners taking off in a helicopter. I would have an idol or advantage tied to a long rope, so as they take off, the castaways would have to run and grab it before it disappears into the sky. Liana, there's your danger factor right back again.
Yes. Okay, good. As long as there's danger, like tied to a shark, tied, you know, like having to run to a helicopter. Oh my gosh, this is the action star part. I'm sure that this was also in Santa's summer house. Right,
it's the climax. Santa left his naughty and nice list tied to a helicopter and Wu has to jump to it.
I mean, if Santa, you know, if I were Santa and I was going to be living in Southern California during the summer, I would also ditch the reindeer and the sleigh and just go for a helicopter. So I think that this makes sense.
I would want somebody to pull like a Captain America in Civil War, I think, where he'll like you grab onto the chopper and you like pull it to you in order to grab the clue.
That's a movie, Mike.
Movies aren't real.
Movies are real. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but Santa's Summer House isn't really real.
What?
I know.
My God, the magic of Christmas has lost its luster to me now, but we must sally forth. Andrea Raffle says, my favorite place for a clue would be on the infamous Survivor Pringles. Instead of trivia questions, it would be an idol clue. So, yes, I think that would be an interesting thing as well, considering that you have to, it really goes back to the age-old question of, like, do you eat the information or do you have to take it in without, you know, putting it into your stomach?
Oh, Cole would just eat it. He would have no idea that there was ever a clue. You could do that with so many different things. Oh my gosh. What about Laffy Taffy jokes?
Ooh.
Instead of Laffy Taffy jokes, it's actually an idol clue. You'd be like, this is a terrible joke, but then you wouldn't know the difference because all the Laffy Taffy jokes are pretty bad anyway.
How did Silly Billy find the idol? He walked from the well 5 paces, then made a left at the big tree.
Yeah. Joe would be like, can someone explain my joke?
I don't get the joke.
I don't get the joke. I don't get it. Does anybody else get it?
And finally, Trent C. proposes the fruit and fiber Charmin outhouse reward. Very tied into the squatty potty talk earlier on in this podcast. Players spend the entire day at a beautiful waterfall and get a giant feast of fruit and fiber. There's a brand new outhouse that anyone can use at any time, but it's only a one-seater. On the 16th square of toilet paper, there is an advantage written, which states the holder gets to sit out of the next immunity challenge, and they are automatically co-winner with whoever wins. I'm not sure how I feel about this advantage of sit out the challenge, you automatically get immunity. I do like the idea of putting it on a random square of toilet paper, because again, like the Pringle, comes down to, do you use it or do you abuse it?
I mean, I love the tie into Casa de Charmin. Also, this very much fits with the Squatty Potty. Like, you don't really need a Squatty Potty if you have fiber, but maybe the new outhouse has a Squatty Potty in it. But I don't know. I mean, if history has taught us anything, we're just going to see whoever the contestants are get drunk and drink a bunch of wine and sleep in the outhouse. So I don't know if they'll use or drunkenly use the toilet paper and we'll never see it. But I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
If history is any indication, King Arthur will zap into the outhouse and provide some helpful medieval tips about fiber.
Time traveling King Arthur. It's like the time traveling Jimmy, like Malcolm, like Jimmy T thing, you know?
All right, let's give our own survivor rewards and places to hide an idol clue. Dom, let's start off with you. What have you got?
So my thought was, and I don't know if this is even possible in the modern era Survivor. I don't think this is a thing anymore. But my thought was, you just have some generic food reward where everyone gets their luxury items, but hidden within one of those luxury items somewhere, and no one knows where it is the clue. So you see everyone going around vandalizing each other's most prized personal possessions, looking for this clue. So Colby's Texas flag gets torn up, Kat's precious picture of Kim Spradley in the frame gets broken, and people are rifling around. There's a lot of potential here, I think.
Oh my gosh, I like that. So I had two ideas, and one was sort of similar, like in a very similar vein, because I really enjoyed the Amanda and Danielle fight from Heroes Villains, and then Colby just like not giving an F, just sitting off to the side. But the idea that if, you know, when they have to go and like give the kids of whatever region they're visiting, you know, like baseball stuff or, you know, bikes or whatever, if the clue was somehow there, because then you would have like grown adults either trying to not fight in front of the children or just going at it, and the kids just being like, oh my God, these people. So that was my first idea.
You know what Spencer would do? Spencer would not give an F. He'd go for that clue.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, whatever. Well, because wasn't it Cass, Spencer, and Wu who all went? And like Cass, yep, and Spencer were just like, yeah.
And then Wu's like, yeah, come on, look at my roundhouse kicks. Here's a pass to the premiere of my movie, Santa's Summer House.
That's what Wu gave out, yeah. Watch me kick Santa. But the other idea that I had, and I don't know if this is possible, if you can teach chickens to talk like parrots, because it would be super cool if you could teach the chicken to say whatever the idol clue was, but you have to like get it out of the chicken. Like, I mean, not, you know, like, I mean, I guess you could somehow.
Could you imagine like Joe is sitting the chicken down and being like, I'm going to crack you, chicken.
Yeah, exactly. And just trying to, yeah, to get the chicken, be like, you have to say the right thing in order to get the chicken to answer. I don't know. I think that there's some merit here. I don't know how it's going to work technically, but I like it.
You're going to have to do some testing with your mother to see if her homebred chickens will be able to communicate information.
That's right. I'll have to. Yeah, exactly. Liana, what are you doing? Just trying to teach this chicken how to talk. It's fine.
Well, maybe you can have it like do when they used to like, quote unquote, make the horses talk by being like, okay, stamp out or scratch out how many paces, yeah, I'm supposed to go from the big tree.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know ravens are really smart. They can do stuff. Parrots can talk. I feel like, I know chickens are sort of just like mini dinosaurs, but there might be something there. There might be something there.
Well, speaking of raven, my suggestion actually ties into a raven. So when they visit these villages in Survivor Rewards, they're usually treated to some sort of performance from the village elders or from the village participants, some sort of dance, what have you. What if the clue is in the dance? You know, like what if they're like beating the sticks around, like drumming around? They're like, oh, three paces to the right. And you like have to listen for contextual clues in the song in order to hear the idol clue.
This sounds like The Amazing Race.
Yes.
Well, and also I thought when you said Raven, I was like, oh no, this is Raven from Big Brother.
It is dancing.
But, yeah, well, it's dancing. And they actually, I mean, that's been, I can't remember if it was a veto or an HOH, but they've done that before where people come out and they like do some dance and then they have to answer questions regarding that dance. So this is similar. I mean, I think of all of our ideas, this might be the one we could see implemented first.
Yeah, can't wait for Survivor 36 when David and Danya, the quick change artists, come out for a reward with idol clues. With Danya has an idol clue printed on her dress.
Yeah, well, I think that that's probably more feasible than a talking chicken, so.
That's true. In the spectrum of things, it lands pretty good in terms of reasonability. All right, so next week's question of the week, in honor of the new Squatty Probes challenge that we talked about, we're going to give you the chance out there to play the role of John Kierhofer. Create a new Survivor Endurance challenge, something that has never been seen before, but something that involves the castaways having to do something for however long as possible, and people will drop out periodically. You have so many ways to communicate this answer to us. You can always reach out to us on Twitter. Use the hashtag RHAPBNB, B, the letter N, the letter B. You can also respond to this post on the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon group, as well as the post on RobHasAWebsite.com, Reddit, basically everywhere. We want to hear your answers as we read it off next week. Speaking of next week, the B&B World Tour will continue. You know, we have two episodes next week. There's going to be a lot going on, and Leon and I could think of one person in the RHAP atmosphere who is an expert at this point at doing podcasts that cover multiple episodes of Survivor in 1 week. From the aforementioned Australian Survivor 2016 and host of the Survivor Know-It-Alls, Nick Udanza will be joining us to recap the two episodes that will air next week of Survivor. Super excited for that.
I actually finally get to podcast with him. He abandons me every single time I try to come on his podcast, and I'm stuck with you, Mike. But now I finally get to podcast with Nick.
Yeah, you finally get to meet the Survivor Santa. You've been sending him letters all years long.
Yeah, well, also, I mean, if you're going to send in your question of the week, if you send it via talking chicken, like, you automatically win. So I just throw that out there.
That is a challenge, and not the Survivor Endurance challenge of trying to teach a chicken to talk. That might be an entirely different thing.
That might
thing.
Be an endurance challenge. That would take a long time.
You already might have just given an idea for our listeners. Nice. Dom, thank you so much for coming on and being privy to all of our games and possibly testing your long-standing relationship with your podcast partner, Colin. What's your social media handle, and what are you guys currently working on the Dom and Colin podcast?
Very nice. Well, you can find me on Twitter at DomHRV. You can find Colin at Colin Stone, and the podcast is domandcolin.com, or you can find us on iTunes. I'm currently working through the regular Survivor coverage, like everyone else in the world is at the moment. Also working through Big Brother All-Stars. We're doing a rewatch series of that. That's one of our favorite seasons. I know one of the most popular seasons of reality TV in general, so it's been a ton of fun covering that and getting everyone's thoughts there. And we're also just branching out into other non-scripted shows as well as non-TV content in general. So if there's anything you want to hear us talk about, then get in touch and we'll make it happen.
And I know you guys also started up a Patreon as well for those that want to contribute to the podcast in any way, shape, or form. And I know I plugged this with Colin as well, but I know you guys recently re-released this. I have a lot of acclaim for it. The Life After Reality TV podcast, part two of the series that you did, talking about the psychological implications of people who have come out of doing reality TV, I think is super interesting. And again, I'll recommend that for anyone who really is interested in reality TV. I think it's something that we forget about as viewers. So to actually be able to hear interviews with people who have lived through that experience, I think is essential.
Yeah, that was always really fun to do, both the first part of that and the second part that you referenced there, because we spend so much time talking about the shows themselves and the games themselves, and there's this whole dimension to the experience of what comes afterwards, readjusting back to regular life, that you really never hear people talk about. So getting to hear people who have been through that and people who have worked on the other side of that fence as psychologists or in production give their thoughts on that too, that was really enlightening and a lot of fun.
I'm sorry, so you think that we're missing something by simply talking about Squatty Probes versus Squatty Potty? I feel like we're really hitting it on the head here.
Yeah, we've covered all the bases in the weirdest game of baseball possible. You can follow both of us on Twitter. Liana is at Liana Boras, LianaBoras. I'm at a Mike Bloom type. Check out the parade coverage. I do exit interviews with Survivor. As I said before, the Cole interview should be up around Monday, as well as all the other exit interviews that the rest of the press is doing. I also cover SNL on post show recaps, finishing up my coverage of Stranger Things season 2 on the Jane Jag Network. I just finished the season last night and I loved it. Can't wait to talk about that. Be sure you're subscribed to Reality TV Wrap Ups as well to get coverage of The Taran Show, The Challenge, oh my God, it's still not done. Still has one more week behind it before it goes into its spinoff. We have Are You the One, Dancing with the Stars just finished up. So much stuff to check out, as well as the main Survivor feed. If you missed the 2+ hour recap with Tyson, that's in the feed right now. The voicemails with Sophie should be up soon too, along with the Wiggle Room, before we jump into